Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Thanks so much.
Your damned cousin, the Valange bitch, wanted me away from Madame de Tourvel. Well, now I am, and I intend to make her suffer for it. Your plan to ruin her daughter? Are you making any progress? Is there anything I could do to help? I'm entirely at your disposal.
Well, yes. I told Danceny you would act as his confidant and advisor. I need you to stiffen his resolve, if that's the phrase. I thought if anyone could help him...
Help? He doesn't need help. He needs hindrances. If he has to climb over enough of them, he might inadvertently fall on top of her. I take it he hasn't been a great success.
Oh, he's been disastrous. Like most intellectuals, he's intensely stupid.
I often wonder how you managed to invent yourself.
Well, I had no choice, did I? I'm a woman. Women are obliged to be far more skillful than men. You can ruin our reputation and our life with a few well-chosen words. So, of course, I had to invent not only myself, but ways of escape no one has ever thought of before. And I've succeeded because I've always known I was born to dominate your sex and avenge my own.
Yes, but what I ask was how.
When I came out into society, I was 15. I already knew that the role I was condemned to, namely to keep quiet and do what I was told, gave me the perfect opportunity to listen and observe. Not to what people told me, which naturally was of no interest, but to whatever it was they were trying to hide. I practiced detachment. I learned how to look cheerful while under the table I stuck a fork into the back of my hand. I became a virtuoso of deceit. It wasn't pleasure I was after, it was knowledge. I consulted the strictest moralist to learn how to appear, philosophers to find out what to think, and novelists to see what I could get away with. And in the end, I distilled everything to one wonderfully simple principle. Win or die.
So you're infallible, are you?
If I want a man, I have him. If he wants to tell, he finds that he can't.
Hello, and welcome to Book Versus Movie. This is a podcast where we read books that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host, Margot D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick.
Hi, everyone.
If you are new here, yes, this is a podcast where we read books, and then we watch the movies that are based on those books. But since we are still in this pandemic time, one thing that we've been doing to make it a little more fun for ourselves is to do a brand new episode every single week. And that means that we are using shorter literary sources, not just books, sometimes articles, sometimes a song or a novella or short story, or in this case, a stage play. Although the stage play is based on a book, and we will talk about that in a little bit. So if you enjoy books and movies, maybe you have some suggestions for us. There's a few places where you can interact with me, Margot P, or Margot D, or other listeners of this podcast on the internet.
Yes, we do have a Facebook page. Be sure to like it. All the episodes are posted there, but we're very interactive in our Facebook group. And what you do is you just type in Book vs Movie Podcast Group and ask to join. We take suggestions there. Also, people just talk about the episodes. They talk about ideas for future episodes. It's a really nice safe space to hang out in Facebook. We also will take suggestions on Twitter. You write out Book versus a Movie there for Twitter. It's also the same for Instagram, Book versus a Movie. We also have an email. It's Book versus Movie Podcast, spell that all out, @gmail.com. We also do have stickers. If you're interested, we can drop them in the mail for you.
And I didn't notice if, I'm sure there must be an audio version of this play. Is that correct?
Yes. That's what I listened to. And it's on Audible. We have a special promotion with them, audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie. The one that I listened to, it was with Dominic West and Janet McTeer were the two stars. It was really, really good. And that, once again, that's audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie.
So I also feel like I should say that before we begin, we're not scholars of literature or film or let alone theater.
Or French Revolution.
Or the French Revolution. Or really anything that we're going to be discussing today. This book, the book, which the play is based on, which the movie is based on, the play, which is based on the book. You could have a whole podcast just about that book. But so we're just going to do the broad strokes here, mm-hmm. and bear with us. So this was a very fun play. I did not read the book. I only looked at it a little bit. But let's talk a little bit about our author.
Yes, I wrote it out. It's Pierre Choderlos de la Classe. He was born in 1741. He published this in 1782 before the French Revolution. Before that, he was in the French army. He was an army general, and sometimes he got bored, and so he would write. This came out in 1782, and exactly in 1789, there was the French Revolution. He was still in the military at the time, still a part of the French Revolution. He was kidnapped and captured a part of that time and then got out. He then had a job in Paris where he helped limber the streets. It's just he had this...
He's an extraordinary figure.
Yeah.
He's kind of like, oh, golly. Never mind. But I'm not even going to attempt his name. I really don't speak French. If you look him up in Wikipedia, there is a portrait of him around the time that the novel was published. He looks like a man who is up to no good.
The wig and everything.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, just an extra, first of all, like he writes this. And it was a blockbuster sensation when mm-hmm. it came out. This novel was a massive hit among the very people that it is criticizing. What I just find extraordinary about him, apart from the fact, he named the streets. He invented the modern artillery shell. Clearly, I mean, you can tell from this novel, which we'll discuss in a moment, play, you can tell that he was sort of, you know, what we would today say embedded with the French aristocracy mm-hmm. pre-revolution, and yet somehow manages to survive said revolution. He really kind of lives through a lot of different things where a lot of people in his circles were not like jumping through these historical hoops with as much agility as he seems to have.
Yes.
This would have been extremely charming.
He had to have been. I mean, he was in with these people. We should say like Marie Antoinette liked this novel. It's supposedly the first novel that's about an idea of two characters doing something just for a theory of something. So they were two libertines, two main characters. It's epistolary, which we've talked about this before. In the book, it's all letters back and forth between the characters. And that's how they correspond with one another. And it's this tale of it's sex and it's about it's sex
it's
and it's violence
racy.
And it's very racy. And it's about the hoi polloi and how they live their lives and get away with things. I read this and I'm like, of course there was a French Revolution. If I thought this is all the rich people were doing with their time.
Right. It's sort of like why we need a French Revolution. But at the same time, you can see how in his style and the way that he's writing it with these letters, and I should say, too, that the illustrations, the original illustrations by mm-hmm. Fragonard are exquisite, beautiful illustrations, and also very racy. You can also see how if you are a member of this circle, if you are an aristocrat, I always want to say aristocrat.
I know.
I'm just
the bourgeoisie.
I'm just a Chicana from Southern California. I've definitely had much more face-to-face time with aristocrats than aristocrats. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but I could see how if I was one, I would be like, yeah, look at this book. We're really cool. Look how badass we are.
They live lives of luxury, and then they live lives of leisure, and they just pursue what they want to pursue. And it's funny because it's still a Catholic country, so there is this idea of morality that's there. But the libertines were like, well, but shouldn't we enjoy food, and shouldn't we enjoy music and poetry and all those things that make life worth living? And I think France has that sort of that contradiction. They do live their lives like that, but they also are a big country. They're a big power. They still need to like get their buses running and their people working. And it's a very interesting culture. They have big revolutions every once in a while. Like the protests we had in America are like in the 60s were kind of adorable compared to what they had in France in the 60s.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Do yourself a favor and read up on some of those. I mean, yeah, like you're right. The 1960s, let alone the French Revolution yes. versus the American Revolution. And I don't know, because I didn't read the whole original book, but I know in the play, these people, it's like they don't even know that any other class of people exists. There's no acknowledgement. Like there's a maid.
Yes.
That's about it. But she's like pretty posh. She has a pretty cushy life for a maid.
Well, let's go through the major characters. We have two people, the Marquis de Merteuil and Vicomte Valmont. So I'm just going to say Marquis and Valmont. It's a woman and a man. They were lovers at one time. They are bon vivants. They're very wealthy. They like sex and they like playing mind games. They correspond with one another. As I said, they were ex-lovers. And then there's people in their circle about to get married or people who are married. The Marquis is very upset because one of her former lovers is going to get married. And so she wants to interfere with that relationship. But Valmont is like, well, and that's a young girl that they're going after. And we should say she's very young. She's like 15.
Super young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's twice her age. Same thing with the movie. He wants to go after a woman who's already married, but her husband is a barrister. He's a lawyer. He's on a case someplace. And so she's alone with her elderly aunt. But she's very pious. She goes to church every day. She prays all the time. She's very loyal to her husband. And he's like, that's the one I want to get. You know, reading the book, reading the play, you know, listening to the audio book. I mean, they're all so arrogant and so full of themselves and they're sociopaths. They have no care at all for the destruction they live. Yeah, they leave behind. No, I don't know if it's
people dying, like literally dying.
There's one scene in the audiobook that I heard, and I'm not sure if it was in the play. You tell me. But in order to one of the ways he tries to win over this married woman is that she sends a spy to follow him. He's hanging around her a lot. She sends a spy, and then he goes into town and he figures out there's this one person that owes money for taxes and they're going to be kicked out of their house. So he says, I'm going hunting. And then what he's really doing, he's going over to pay the taxes, but he's doing that in order for the spy to witness him do that.
Right. Knowing the whole time that he's being spied on. Exactly. So I just want to mention, there's one. So this is a long book. It's like 450 pages-ish. Then that, it was a smash hit when it came out. It's kind of never not been, I think it's been in print like ever since. Mm-hmm. It's always been a hugely popular piece of French literature. Has been adapted many, 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 many times before this play ever, which we're going to discuss, which mm-hmm. is the adaptation that we're talking about now. The biggest difference between the original novel and the stage play and the movie we're going to be talking about is the ending. Mm-hmm. Each one of those things has a completely different ending, although they kind of have the same message in the ending, which I think is kind of interesting. I don't mm-hmm. know why, like, the play. I mean, I sort of get why the play, because you're on a stage, like just the parameters of a stage play. That's why it has a different ending. But then the movie has a completely different ending altogether from that for its own reasons. So that's really the main difference. But as far as the characters, the setting, the intrigue, the plot gets real complicated for a little bit there. Because everybody's scamming everybody else and mm-hmm. manipulating everybody else. But that is all straight out of the book. I mean, that's from the source material. And I think that at least from what I saw of the book and read of the book, the play, it seems like it really captures.
Yes.
That story. It tells it in a way that you can understand in a stage play and really is a very interesting exploration of those themes. Again, we're talking about a cruel, lopsided kind of society. You have these very rich, very, very ultra rich people who don't even know about other people who are like picking their food and mm-hmm. sewing their clothes and all that. Not unlike the yuppies of the 80s when this play came out. It's a very interesting and timely exploration of those themes. And yet, you know, you're telling it in I think a pretty true to the history mm-hmm. kind of context. So maybe we should talk about this play because this play inspired a couple of filmmakers. So the stage play opens, I think it opens in London in 1985 and is a huge hit. I mean, people just love this story.
Yeah, so it opens in 85. It stars Alan Rickman. He won the British...
BAFTA?
BAFTA's the film one. What's the one?
Oh, that's right.
Whatever that is. I'm sorry, you guys.
Whatever it is.
Alan Rickman was originally...
I know what it looks like.
I know what it looks like. It's London stage, 1985, which is when Cats came out. I mean, London
it
was...
a big time for London theater, absolutely.
And so people were adapting things from that or taking ideas from London and bringing them to New York and also adapting them into film. Because I tried reading the book. The book is pretty challenging, I think, to kind of get through. They bring it down very beautifully and in a very understandable way. It just kind of goes right into the action that the Marquis and Valmont Martoy are just writing back and forth. She's bored. I mean, she's also somebody that she would, be, I mean, kind of we would call a feminist. She's somebody that's very strong.
Kind of. I mean, she's not married.
She doesn't want to get married. I mean,
she doesn't want to get married.
She doesn't want to get a job either.
She's rich on her own.
Yes.
Yeah. These people do
nothing. That's the problem. I mean, they do nothing. So it's a lot of like very long speeches and very racy dialogue back and forth and sort of like, hey, why don't you come over here right now? And I'll send you like I'm sending this to you. It's noon right now. I expect you to be here at 7:00. And by 8:00, you can leave and we'll do this, this and this. Basically, you know, I'm DDF. Let's come over. And he writes back and says, nah, I'm on a thing. I'm going to try to woo this woman who's married. And she says, yeah, but I need you to woo this teenage girl who's just getting out of a convent because I'm mad at her mother because her mother is saying things about me. Then that mother also starts saying things about him. So he's now double duty. He's wooing this married woman and then he's wooing this teenager. Teenager is then falling in love with a young man about her age. He's also wealthy. He also can fence. We know that. And then they both like music and they play music together. And everyone around them realizes, oh, these two crazy kids, they're falling in love. They should be together. It's a big deal. You and I are both raised Catholic, by the way. You know, back then, if you were having sex before marriage, that made you a spoiled person.
You're garbage.
They sent you back to the convent. Or the priesthood. I mean, like, it depended on, you know, but especially for women, you know, you were sort of limited and with your choices. He says he's falling in love with the woman that's married. He berates her into having a relationship with him. I mean, he insults her. He calls her. I mean, just he's insufferable.
He's so terrible. He is insufferable. Oh. And it's so, you know, I wish I could have seen Alan. Don't you wish you could have seen Alan Rickman in this role?
Also, yeah. Yes. He wasn't bankable then. This is before he did Die Hard.
This is even pre-Die Hard. So it's a smash hit, this play. And we'll talk about the plot a little more when we talk about the movie, I think, because it's mm-hmm. basically the same except for the end. And we'll talk about the end.
Yeah.
But, well, let's talk about the end. So they go through all these machinations, which we'll discuss, you know, the intrigue and seduction and cruelty. And again, nobody has a job of any kind.
No, they walk around a lot.
Gosh.
Going for walks.
Yes, many, many walks. Many walks in the snow, walks in the sun, walks indoors, lavish costumes and so on. Two filmmakers see this play and decide, I've got to make a movie about this. One is Stephen Frears, who we're going to discuss today. Mm-hmm. And the other is Milos Forman. Milos Forman decides to base his movie on the original, on the source material, on the novel. Stephen Frears decides to adapt the play for film. these are both kind of big shots who can just decide to make a movie and get a movie made.
Yeah.
Just like, guess what? I went to this play. Now I'm going to make a movie about it. They each have their studios that they're working with. They both go into production at the same time. Finding out, you know, they're talking. This is what I can't believe. They're interviewing or auditioning the same actors for the same roles for both films. Mm-hmm. The one that we're going to discuss is Stephen Frears' movie, Dangerous Liaisons. Milos Forman's is called Valmont. It's pretty good. But the thing is, Stephen Frears, I guess his studio had like a little more
push,
maybe cash.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they were able, because they knew this other Milos Forman, and he was a big deal already. They knew Milos Forman was making this movie, the same thing. We got to rush. We got to get this thing out there, man. So they rush production and squeak out ahead of Milos Forman's film. Then Milos Forman's studio is like, crap. Dang it. This movie's out. Dang it. It's a hit.
Yeah.
So they decide to wait and delay the release of Valmont. But there were a lot of actors and actresses who again auditioned for both films in the same role. And some went this way and some went that way. Annette Bening auditioned mm-hmm. for Glenn Close's role. She ended up playing the role in the Milos Forman what's your name? Meg Tilly, who plays the role that's played by Michelle Pfeiffer mm-hmm. in the movie we're going to discuss right now. She was offered Michelle Pfeiffer's role. She decided instead to do Valmont, where she met and fell in love with Colin Firth, who was playing Valmont, who was very relatively unknown at the time, at least to movie audiences.
Really? They were together?
They had a baby.
Oh, I didn't know. What, Meg Tilly?
They had like a long-term relationship. Yes. They had a long-term relationship. They met on that film. And they have a son who's like in his 30s now. But yeah,
he's gorgeous.
I'm sure he must be. I don't know what he looks like. But Meg Tilly, I know this because I follow Meg Tilly on YouTube. Meg Tilly now lives in British Columbia, and she is a writer. She's a very successful author, a novelist.
Oh.
And she has the most adorable YouTube channel. And it's called like Tea Time with Meg Tilly or something like that. And it's literally just her with a cup of tea. She loves tea. And she has a different kind of tea each time. And she just sits down and she like tells stories about her, because she retired from acting a long time ago. Mm-hmm. She tells stories about her time in Hollywood and talks about her books and, you know, her little Meg Tilly voice. And, hey, it's tea time with Meg Tilly. It's super cute and very soothing when the news is harrowing.
I was just
so
gonna say,
I recommend it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, So she, a lot of people at the time were like, oh, she missed out on being in the bigger film. But she felt like, well, I have a son and I had this.
Yeah. Relationship. And she had they're Colin Firth for a while.
they're still really, really, really good friends. There was a Drew Barrymore auditioned for, I think, for both mm-hmm. films. So this was something that was like,
it was a hot,
a
property.
Very hot property, properties in Hollywood mm-hmm. at the exact same time, which is so bonkers to me now. Why would you do that? Why would you make, like, you wouldn't make, it's like making two movies at the same time, two adaptations of You're in Town or something.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? But that's what they did.
That's what happened.
I know. I think they're both good films, but I do think this one's better.
Yeah.
I'd say
Valmont I've only seen once or twice. And I don't remember being that memorable.
It's okay. Yeah. You know, it's good. I mean, it's good. The acting is good. The directing is good. But Dangerous Liaisons is just like on another level. I think because the play was so good, the writing, which the mm-hmm. writing is excellent. I think the dialogue is, I mean, a lot of the dialogue is lifted directly from the source material, but it's translated really deftly. It's very snappy and like, whoa, like very sizzling moments of back and forth just in the dialogue. I mean, most of it takes place in the dialogue. There's not that much that like is action that's happening. It's them talking about what they're doing and what they're thinking about doing and what happened and what didn't happen. And yet you're like riveted, which is what the letters are, you know, which is great because in the book itself, it's just letters. It's people describing what happened. That you can kind of convey that on a live stage, I think, is pretty impressive.
Absolutely. Stephen Frears is the director. He directed My Beautiful Laundrette in 1985 with Daniel Day-Lewis. That was a big deal. Prick Up Your Ears. I remember The Grifters. You did that right after this. I loved The Grifters.
I love Prick Up Your Ears. Mm-hmm. That's a great book, by the way. Maybe we should do that sometime. Mm-hmm. Maybe for Pride. Great book. I love, love that movie. It's one of my favorite movies of his.
He also did High Fidelity, which we covered in our like first season, like a long, 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 long time ago. I think it's on our Patreon page for free. The Queen, Philomena. He's done everything. So he's putting this cast together. Play the trailer now. Let me play the trailer.
I've always known I was born to dominate your sex and avenge my own.
Is there anything I could do to help?
Come back when you've succeeded with Madame de Tourvel.
Yes.
And I will offer you a reward.
My love. I have this appalling reputation.
Yes, I have been warned about you.
What is true of most men is doubtless so of him.
Love what you mean.
You promised
yes,
not to speak of
it. Yes, of course, I understand, but I must know.
I can't.
I want the excitement of watching her betray everything that's most important to her.
I love you so much.
You may genuinely be unaware of this, but I can see quite plainly that you're in love with this woman.
No, not at all. Do you suppose we only feel compelled to chase the ones who run away?
Immaturity.
I forgot he did Philomena. I love Philomena too.
I know.
That's
Philomena's
a great,
great
movie too.
Yeah. We have Glenn Close as our Marquis Isabelle de Metoy. John Malkovich, and that was wasn't exactly a sex symbol. He wasn't exactly a leading man. He wasn't exactly a guy. You're like,
he was a known entity.
Beautiful women.
Yes, he was a people thought of him at least at that time. Like, okay, yeah, he could be. Yeah, okay, that's an interesting choice. But yeah, okay, he can certainly carry a leading man role. We talked about him when we talked about Of Mice and Men.
Right. He was in Steppenwolf.
Yes. And so he was pretty, you know, I think of him in like, I am blanking. I think it's the heat. I'm blanking on everybody's. I can see their faces. I cannot remember their names. What is your name? Willem Dafoe.
Yeah.
Huh. That was really a reach.
It's very hot when we're recording this by now. We're having heat
waves. It's super hot and humid and I do not do
well. It's making me loopy too. Yeah.
Mm. But to go from playing Lenny.
Yes. Very
to
playing
well. Playing this guy who's playing, you know, mental chess with everybody all the time in and out of the bedroom is a stretch or, you know, for an audience to imagine. But I mean, the instant you see him,
you get it.
You're like, what is this guy about?
Uma Thurman is our Cecile. She was 18. God, she's beautiful. I mean,
it's a little distracting. Yeah. She's so pretty.
And Michelle Pfeiffer is Madame Tourvel. Swoozy Kurtz, I forgot about her.
Me too.
We talked about
her
last episode that we did. Heartburn, excuse me. She was in that. She plays Uma Thurman's mother. Keanu Reeves, like you and I were going back and forth, like, oh, he has to be in the worst one. He can't be in this one.
It's confusing because these two movies came out at the same time and they both had big stars in them.
And I really enjoyed Mildred Natwick. She plays the aunt. Her last performance before she was passed away. She was in her 80s.
That's another role that I got confused because Shan Phillips, who I adore, plays that role in the other film.
I was going to say that also the screenplay is Christopher Hampton, who won the Olivier Award. That's what we were thinking of.
Thank you.
Sorry, guys. We're going crazy from the heat here. It also was a Tony Award nominated theatrical adaptation. Also for the Royal Shakespeare Company. He won the Oscar for this. If you heard in the trailer, this is like verbal gymnastics, verbal sparring 101. But it's also, the movie just really brings out, because I just listened to the play. I didn't see it. When you see these costumes, and they filmed everything in France, the makeup, the wigs, the hair, the everything.
You have to watch it over and over again.
Yeah.
We watched this. I can't even believe this. I forgot until I was watching. I've seen it twice this week. we watched this in high school when we were studying the French Revolution.
Are you kidding?
Isn't that bizarre? I went to a Catholic high school. We watched this movie.
This is rated R for a reason.
I know. Yeah. Isn't that weird? That seems so weird to me now.
John Malkovich, so Glenn Close and John Malkovich, same kind of deal. They're verbal sparring. He woos Michelle Pfeiffer. He woos Uma Thurman. I found it, especially seeing it on screen versus listening to it, very upsetting going for Cecile. She's much younger than him. It's rape. It's not, she's not giving consent.
Oh no, he's
assaulting
her. And that's very clear in the book and in the play.
Yeah.
That is, but you're right. When you're seeing it on film, similarly in the, again, I'm going to just keep talking about the Milos Forman film. In that film, that role is played by Fairuza Balk, who we talked about just recently when we talked about Almost Famous. And she really seems like a kid. She makes Uma Thurman look like a sophisticated, you know, lady of the world. She seems so young. It's really skeevy. It's upsetting.
Yeah. And she starts to fall in love with our Keanu Reeves, who's good. I should also say, this is one of the first English adaptations, once again, on film. Everyone's speaking with an American accent. A lot of times when they put Americans in these kind of roles in Europe, they have this weird European accent. Like, some people are
bizarre.
British. Some
it's
people
like, are you German. From Europe land?
Yeah,
where
exactly.
Are you
they do
I
something
love that
affected.
About this film.
Yeah, they're just talking with American accents.
Just why can't we? We're not pretending.
Yeah.
You know, we can just tell us everybody's speaking French, but we can understand you. Nobody wants to read. Got it.
Right. Right. It's just it remains consistent. I forget in the play. Does Cecile become pregnant in the play as well?
Yes.
OK.
She does. Yeah.
This is also super upsetting. He's having this affair.
He rapes this girl.
Right.
And then basically blackmails her into continuing to have
sex with him.
To have sex with him. She becomes pregnant. She's engaged to this older guy who she's never even met.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this poor girl in this. Yeah. Like she's really she and the Madame de Tourvel are the two like real victims in this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So she gets pregnant and there's talk of like, well, you know, it's so close to when she's supposed to marry that older guy that probably will get away with it. No big deal. And then she miscarries
in bed. With
him. I think that's in all versions.
Michelle Pfeiffer, he takes a while to and they had an affair. In real life, and that caused the end of his marriage to Glenn Headley. Is that her name?
I think so.
Yeah. Let me look. Yes, Glenn Headley. Yep. Yeah. But anyway, in the film, they have this affair, and really, Michelle Pfeiffer is just sort of like, she's so tortured because she loves her husband. She doesn't want to do this, but he's so manipulative once again. And they do.
And he's just lying to her. Like, he's so good at being so, he so reads people and knows what to, the right things to say. And he's just playing her like a fiddle and she doesn't even know it.
Yeah.
She's so naive. She does not realize that everything that he has ever said to her is a lie, basically.
Why are you so angry with me?
All I can offer you is my friendship. Can't you accept it?
I could pretend to, but that would be dishonest. The man I used to be would have been content with friendship. And then set about trying to turn it to his advantage. But I've changed now. I can't conceal from you that I love you tenderly, passionately, and above all, respectfully. So how am I to demote myself to the tepid position of friend? Not that you're even pretending to show friendship.
What do you mean?
Well, is this friendly?
Why must you deliberately destroy my peace of mind?
You were wrong to feel threatened by me, madame. Your happiness is far more important to me than my own. That is what I mean when I say that I love you.
I think we should end this conversation.
I shall leave you in possession of the field. But look, we're to be living under the same roof, at least for a few days. Surely we don't have to try to avoid each other.
Of course not. Provided you adhere to my few simple rules.
I shall obey you in this, as in everything.
He claims he's in love with her and that he's tortured by this love. Once again, she's hanging out with her aunt on this huge mansion. It just goes for walks every day and goes to church every day. Her life is kind of boring. So she is flattered by this person and she tries to, you know, tell him no, but he doesn't take no for an answer. He just keeps at her and manipulates her. They have a relationship. Then, spoiler, by the way, Glenn Close, Marquise, has a relationship with Don Senny, who is Keanu Reeves. Mm-hmm. Keanu Reeves finds out that Malkovich got his girlfriend, would-be girlfriend, pregnant, and then challenges him to a duel because he found that Malkovich is putting all the shenanigans that he is putting out there into the world. And it's very exciting. Like, it's out in the snow and it looks real.
It's beautiful. I wonder what it must have been like on stage, but on film, the choice to have it be in the snow.
Yeah. Oh, and it just sounds real. It just sounds like it's really
amazing.
Yeah.
No.
Do as I say!
A moment of your time. 2 things, a word of advice, which of course you may ignore, but it is honestly intended, and a request.
Go on.
The advice is, be careful of the Marquise de Mantoy.
You must permit me to treat with skepticism anything you have to say about her.
Nevertheless, I must tell you, in this affair, we are both her creatures. As I believe her letters to me will prove. When you have read them, decide to circulate them.
Spoiler, Malkovich gets stabbed, as he should. He's a creep. He then says to Keanu's character, here, there's a stack of letters. These are what that Isabel the Mertoy has been sending me all these months, basically putting everything into motion, causing all this death, causing people, this one girl, Cecile, to lose her virtue, to have to call this woman to have an affair. Who, by the way, she's dying.
Which is kind of true.
It's very true.
I mean, and he wasn't fighting her on it, but it was her idea.
It was her idea. She then, Michelle Pfeiffer, gets very sick and then goes to the monastery to try to get better. She's got some fever.
So it's part of it's in all three versions too. So there's, at a certain point when Glenn Close's character is figuring out that Valmont is really falling for Madame de Tourvel, she tells him like, well, you need to break it off now. Like, that's what you got to do is you got to break it off. And, you know, you said you didn't care about it. He's like, yeah, I don't care. I mean, it's all this like daring, like mm-hmm. teenagers do, you know, well, I dare you to break up with her. If you really don't care about her, then you'll break up with her. And he's like, I'll show you. I'll break up with her. Mm-hmm. And he goes and breaks up with her and breaks her heart. And she gets super sick and dies.
Yeah, she gets some fever, goes to this monastery. They're doing the cupping thing on her back. It looks painful.
But again, really cool choice to show us 18th century medicine.
Yeah.
I take advantage of that opportunity. I think it's great.
Yeah. And I really like, there's one point in the movie where John Malkovich, he's riding back and forth with Glenn Close. And at one point he's riding on the back of a woman's naked body. You know, he's leaning on, that's in all the versions. Like that's what this guy is. This is who he is. This is what he's about. He's riding to one woman while he's basically laying naked with another woman. He has no core. He has no center of morality. He dies. Keanu gets these letters. And then this is what's the big difference in the movie. In the movie, Glenn Close's character loses her standing in society. She shows up at an opera. All of a sudden, the audience starts booing her.
It's so gorgeous.
Yes.
I mean, because the movie opens with her getting ready to go to the opera. And so at the end of the movie, here we are. It's time to go to the opera again. And this time, like, everybody is looking at her. Instead of being intrigued and everything's, like, behind, whispered behind their hands and behind curtains and so on, everybody knows everything. She's walking into this theater where everybody knows all her business and what she's been up to. And they boo her. And it's gorgeous. They're in this 18th century theater.
Oh, it's
she's
beautiful.
In her box. And the whole place is booing her. And it's magnificent.
Ooh, ooh.
She goes back to the home in the play, and in the book, she leaves or she gets smallpox, right?
Okay, so they're very different. The endings are all very different. So in the movie, we should say, so she gets booed, and that's basically the end. You're led to believe, like, okay, well, now she's an outcast, and she really can't go anywhere now, probably off with her head in a little bit. So that's the end. She gets booed, she takes off her makeup, and the movie's over. In the play, I don't believe Valmont gives those letters to Danceny. I think he just gets killed.
Okay.
And you see at the end, the Marquise is again playing cards. We don't know what game it is, but she's playing cards with the woman who is played by Susie Kurtz, you know, her little gaggle of friends that she has. And they're just kind of, you know, all this death and destruction has happened. And they're just like blithely playing cards, like nothing has happened. And on the, what do you call that? The proscenium behind them, upstage of them, you see a shadow of a guillotine. It's just this, like, these people don't care about anything. Like, what's going to happen to people like this? Oh, right. That's what happens.
Right. Eventually. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So that's how the play ends. So nobody ever kind of finds out what she was up to in the play. In the stage version. In the original version, in the novel, yes, he gives that. It's very much like in the movie. He's like, take these letters. This shows what she's been up to. Danceny publishes the letters. Mm-hmm. It's more drawn out in the book. I understand that she's like, oh, crap. Everybody knows what I've been up to. And she flees Paris and she goes to the countryside. She develops smallpox.
Mm-hmm.
She loses. So her face gets all scarred.
Gets pockmarked.
And she loses an eye. And so she's not beautiful anymore. She can't manipulate people with her beauty anymore. And that's the end of the book. But I get it. You can't really show, like, that's a lot to show in a movie when we've already been through 2 hours. Yeah. So I thought that choice.
No, it's brilliant.
Which is just a Stephen Frears choice is brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or perhaps it was the playwright, because didn't he write the screenplay?
He won the screenplay. They won for art direction and they won for costumes.
Great Michelle screenplay.
Oh, my God. Michelle Pfeiffer was nominated. Glenn Close was nominated. It was nominated for Best Picture, not for Best Director, but it did win. And it was also nominated for the original score, which is really, really good. That's from George Fenton. But yeah, Christopher Hampton won for the screenplay. Stuart Craig, Gerard James for the art direction, which is,
I mean, oh that's God. I feel bad because Valmont is a good movie.
Yeah.
Milos Forman's movie is a good movie. The sets are beautiful. The costumes are beautiful. The acting is great. The art direction is great, but Dangerous Liaisons is better. it's just a little bit better. And I think one of the things that really puts it over the top is that score.
Yeah.
The score is so good.
It's beautiful.
And the Milos Forman score in that version is just not as good.
Who is it that, Sofia Coppola did a version of Marie Antoinette, but she used pop songs? And
yeah.
Yeah. Some people love that. I found it a little jarring. I like classical music. I like a piano. I like a concerto.
It was just not, I don't know. Yeah. And I get it. You know, it just, yeah, I get it. It just wasn't for me. I felt like, I didn't think it was bad or anything, but I was like, yeah, this isn't for me.
Yeah. But it's around that same time. Yeah. We're talking about the same kind of people. And
but there are so many versions of this.
Oh,
again,
it's yeah.
So many films.
I know.
And operas and
plays,
stage plays.
Yes.
And yeah. because it's such a fascinating, you know, human study.
Yeah. I think Malkovich, he puts a malevolence into it. He's just so sinister.
He's so evil.
He's such a creep. He's so evil that I know I got very upset. I had to leave the room with the Uma Thurman scene. I actually just got upsetting. Up. I should say, like, this guy is a monster. Yeah. I mean, we should say, like, he is an assaulter. He doesn't take no for an answer.
He's not the only male role, but he really is the only male role.
Except
there's him.
Keanu.
And Donsony, even like, you don't even get him that much, even in the stage play. He's very minor character. Mm-hmm. And then the only other male, I think, is his valet, is Valmont's valet.
I think, and also Murtaigne, I keep calling her a different name. It's this Marquis Isabelle de Murtaigne. I think she has a lover too, but he's only in like a couple of scenes, very quick.
You barely see him. Yeah. So he's really the guy. He is the guy in this story. Yeah. He's pretty terrible.
Yes. He's pretty terrible, but it's a great story. It's really interesting, like going through all these people and all these versions of it and taking it in. I really enjoyed it. I'm trying to decide which I liked the best. And what do you think?
I know. The play is super good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel like I can't. This is one of those cases where I feel like I can't judge the source material because it is a play. I feel like I can't judge it fairly because we can't see it,
yeah.
You know, and let alone experience like seeing it live. That must have been, obviously, it was so amazing that these two really great filmmakers were like, I got to make a movie of this. But the writing, I mean, the writing is really, really good mm-hmm. in this version. Everything, like just like you said, like all the whole combination, all like, swirling together to take you on this ride with these people that you just hate.
They're awful people. I mean, they're pathetic.
They're awful or they're pathetic. Yes. You're kind of not rooting for any of them.
No.
You feel a little bad that Cecile and Torvel are getting caught up in this. They're just, you know, ninnies really.
Yeah.
And they are totally destroyed. I have to kind of give it to the movie. I just love it. I love the end. I think the choice of the end is so perfect. It's so simply done and it tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah. You know, I don't think Glenn Close ever won an Oscar. She's been nominated like 10 times now.
I don't think she has either.
And she's so good.
She's phenomenal.
Evil. I love her. In this,
she's the best when she's evil.
Yes, I like an evil Glenn Close.
She give me a Sunset Boulevard. Give me a what was the one with the bunny?
Yes. I know what you're talking about. I'm
Cruella DeVille. Yes. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Fatal Attraction.
That's the one.
Is that the one? So, did you get any of your books yet, or no? You were a Parent Trap or?
Oh, no, I did not.
Okay.
Now that you mention it. Where are my books? I've had really weird postal things lately.
Well, I have a few ideas for short stories that could work. You tell me what you think. Okay. There's The 25th Hour. It's a Spike Lee movie. It came out in 2002. It was like the first movie after 9/11. It's Ed Norton. It's based on an Esquire magazine article.
Is it about 9/11?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no. I would never ask that.
Okay.
Yeah, you and I have been through that once. I don't think so. Yeah. There's Minority Report, which is a Philip K. Dick story. That's Tom Cruise stars in it. A Face in the Crowd, which is, I love that movie.
Let's do that one. Yeah. I love A Face in the Crowd.
It's based on a short story by Bud Schulberg.
That is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Same here. It's in my top 10. It's easily in my top 10. Andy Griffith. Is it Lee Remick who in her, one of her like film debut?
It's Lee Remick, Andy Griffith, Lee Remick, Patricia O'Neill, Walter Matthau.
It's one of the best directed movies you will ever see.
Agreed.
And the story is so, is it prescient?
And I've never read it.
I've never read the story. It's Bud Schulberg. And I looked it up. It's easy to get. Great. So we're going to do A Face in the Crowd next. I'm super excited about this.
Me too.
Okay. Feel free to send along your suggestions for book versus movie, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Our email, once again, is bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what you hear and you listen to us through iTunes, Apple Podcasts, if you can leave us a few stars, that would be great. And Margo, where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com, and all of my social media callouts are at She's Nacho Mama. And where can they find you?
You could find me at Brooklyn Fit Chick, mostly for Twitter and Instagram, and my site is brooklynfitchick.com. Thanks so much, everybody, and we'll be back soon with a new episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Book vs. Movie podcast. We are a part of the Frolic Podcast Network. You can find more podcasts you will love at frolic.media/podcasts. We follow the hashtags LadyPodSquad and PodernFamily. If you want to support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, go to PATREON, and look for Book versus Movie Podcast. We have a basic Facebook page, but we also have a private Facebook group. Go to Facebook and type in Book vs Movie Podcast Group if you want to join that. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Book versus Movie. Spell all those words out. If you'd like to send us an email, it's Book versus Movie Podcast, spell that all out, at gmail.com. We do have a promotion with Audible. If you want to check out their service for free for 30 days, go to audibletrial.com/book versus movie. You can follow Margot D at Brooklyn Fit Chick on social media and Margot P at She's Nacho Mama. Thanks so much again for checking out our show, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.